Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, yeah. Adrian, Adrian in the building. Shout out to Bree.
What up, Bree?
And we finna go in. Look,
yes, sir.
Look. We came to break down a few topics here. So if you got time, sit and acknowledge it. It's positive, uplifting, and honest here. Keep your ears open and soaking all the words spoken. A couple of jokes to keep it fun, get your laugh on. And maybe a few pointers to get your cash on. See Bree, she all about building. Straight up out the NY, Brooklyn in the building. All the way down to the southern states. West Coast on up to the Great Lakes. So you fragging echoes, so if you ain't fragile, through the net connection, we streaming you the message. So welcome to the life of Bree, breaking down the to the third degree.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life, how we live in life. From politics to the current events, economics and race, whether you're poor or you're rich. This is the Bree life, what you live in life. Welcome to the Bree life, how we live in life.
Coming to you live and streaming to all four points of the globe. It's your girl, Brooklyn born and Crown Heights raised. Living life and breathing life. It's Bree, baby.
Peace and blessings. You have reached the Bree Life Radio Show, and I'm your host, Bree. And guess what? It's Thursday, and we are freestyling, baby. Tonight, we're going to have a very different freestyle. For our first hour, we're going to have two very special guests who will be squaring off on a particular topic. I'll hold that for a little while until both guests get on the line. But in the meanwhile, here's a very familiar voice, one that we've missed for a while. It is Mark from Houston, Texas, baby. Peace and blessings, Mark.
Peace and blessings, ma'am. How are you?
How are you?
I'm well. I am well. No complaints.
I'm sorry?
I said I'm well, no complaints.
No complaints, well, that's always good. Well, we're freestyling, and guess what? Let's wait to freestyle. Let's freestyle until our other guests join the line. Tell me how you've been, what you've been up to, what's going on. We missed you.
Well, basically, what I've been doing a lot of blogging, and I've been doing a podcast, some podcasts that you can find on YouTube under Mark Said It, one word, MarkSaidit, and basically just some satire and some, you know, observations for as far as, you know, things that are going on from dating to other human relations and interactions. So I've been putting out these little video / kind of like slideshow / audio. Mark Said It's in under a minute. So that's kind of what I've been doing, a lot of that kind of stuff. You just talk about different little subjects that we...
Well, you know what? The perfect segue to us listening to one of your Mark Said It in a minute. So we're going to do that right now.
In 1 second
of 1 minute,
it only takes one word,
one gesture,
one story, one idea,
one
hug, one kiss, one smile, one hand, one look, one touch, one dream.
Everybody got a dream.
One gift. And one person to do one of these things to make one difference. Oh, yeah. Before I go.
One thought.
One thought.
One thought.
Will you be the one to do at least one of these things? Today's segment has been brought to you by the number.
One.
It's been Mark Said It in under
1 minute.
Wow. That was great. We actually aired that on the show yesterday, and I got some very interesting responses, all positive. Could you tell the audience why you chose to, how did you come up with the Mark Said It in under a minute idea? Where did that come from?
Well, actually, I've been, you know, contemplating it for like probably about a year now, and I always said, you know, I'm a pretty talkative person, so a lot of times people say, you know, yeah, you feel me. So I ain't mad at nobody for saying that. You know, I understand it. But the thing is, I said to myself, I said, you know, I can probably say something that has some kind of clarity and hopeful impact in less than a minute, you know, because being in what I call an attention deficit society, and we have a lot of things that are distracting us, we don't really want to sit down very long to get any information, whether it be reading a book or even looking at a television show. I mean, our levels of high distraction is such that when something is on, if a commercial comes on, we immediately go to another station to look for something else, constantly needing something to feed our immediate arousal, you know, as far as our level of stimulation. So I was saying, you know, I want to say something that might have some level of impact, and I thought about commercials. Most commercials are between 30 seconds and 1 minute. And the fact that I felt that, you know, I can probably say something in under a minute. And that's why I want that all my little skits or diatribes or presentations were under 1 minute, and they had some level of impact. And I always think about the fact that the most effective commercials get all that information in under a minute. So that kind of drove me to want to see what I can come up and do. And it kind of took on a life of its own, because a friend who has a Blog Talk Radio show also, and he runs a podcast. He was like, well, man, could you do some podcasts for me? And I said, well, you know, I got an idea. So I start putting those out there, and then I start doing them pretty regularly, like somewhat almost like 5 days a week would be putting out a different Mark set in under a minute. So that's kind of what I've been doing. That's kind of the idea where it came from, and that's, you know, what Mark said in under a minute is about.
Hey, well, I know Mark has a lot to say. I'm impressed that you were able to get it under a minute, but that's a lot to say in a minute. I've heard some of them myself, and again, you can find, for the listeners, you can go on YouTube and look up Mark Said It in under a minute, and listen to them and watch them. They're quite enjoyable. They're very animated, some of them, and I'm sure you'd enjoy them. We're freestyling, so you know it's Thursday. And until we have a couple of other guest callers join our show tonight, I'm going to take a caller. This caller is calling from 718-399. That number again is 718-399. Peace and blessings. Okay, I think that listener wants to just listen. They don't want to talk. So we'll put them on mute. Anyway, so I got some rather good news. My son called me today and said, Mom, guess what? I said, what, son? He said, Dad just got married. And no, for real. Dad just got married. And him and Tia are having a baby. She's several months pregnant. I think that's wonderful. So to Alex and Tia, we at the Bree Life Radio Show want to wish you peace and blessings. We want to wish you all the best in your future together. And may you have a happy life. And may you bring a beautiful baby into the world. That's
well,
from,
I don't know them. I don't know them, but I was having a glass of wine.
Of the participants of the Bree Life Radio Show.
Well, check this out. Cheers.
I'm sorry?
I said cheers.
Cheers, yes. Absolute.
Cheers.
Listen,
salute.
Black is beautiful. It's always
yes,
good
right.
to hear that, hey, we're marrying one another. Okay?
There's hope.
Hey, there's hey, let's talk about that. What do you think about marriage today? Mark from Houston, Texas.
What do I think about marriage?
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, I think ultimately we want to be together. I mean, and then if we choose that form to unite with each other, that's fine. I think it has some underpinnings that don't really promote some of the things that I think about. So, you know, I think that it's quite interesting. But right now, because of there being a lack of any other, a very few types of agreements that can allow us to have benefits and different other things that the state and our employers provide, that may be the most optimal way of joining union. As far as the state of it and its ability to sustain in our ever-changing, you know, environment, social environment, is quite questionable as to whether that might be the best form of uniting. I think it's highly romanticized still. I think it's a fact that many people have said once they get married, they see different changes, and I don't think it's a coincidence that that happens. I think there's me and you and one of the other callers in the past have had a conversation concerning the whole concept of marriage and the ease, as some might say, of getting in and out of it, and I personally don't think it's very easy to get in and out of, first of all. I think it can be very litigious depending on who has what amount of money and what type of assets are involved. It can get very crazy, number one. Number two, we usually connect with people because we like them and we really enjoy them, and the word marriage deals with obligation. And you can be obliged to somebody without liking them or loving them. And I think that the level of obligation sometimes...
They provide you with that PCA, right?
Well, I think the obligation takes away PCA. I don't think obligation makes... Because you don't have passion, care, and attention because you're obliged to do that, you see. A man is not going to... You know, I don't know if you even want somebody to give you passion, care, and attention based upon obligation, you know. It's even
why do you view taking vows that most people, I'm not going to say all, but most people come to make because it was free will? It wasn't because they had a shotgun wedding. It wasn't because somebody was pregnant. It wasn't because they had a lack of resources and decided to merge their resources together to have a better lifestyle, but they emotionally felt that they individually were ready, and now they want to join their lives with another person. And here's this person standing in front of me, and I'm making this vow to him. He's making that vow to her. What's wrong with that?
Well, nothing is wrong with it, but I liken it to barometric pressure. Now, you might say, what the hell does that have to do with anything? Well, let's talk about barometric pressure. Let's say you came to Houston or any other area to have a good time, and you agreed to come and have a good time, and you didn't think very much about barometric pressure. Barometric pressure meaning there's a level of pressure in the environment, and you can sense that when you go into that area. Now, the reason I say is, well, Mark, what the hell does that got to do with marriage? Marriage is an environment, and you make an agreement to go to Houston to have fun, but you have no idea what that environment is going, how that environment, once you enter into it, it's going to start causing your sinuses to react or you to feel differently. Now, your desire was to come out here and have fun and enjoy yourself or do whatever the case may be. But then you find out once you step in this area that there is conditions that by coming into these city limits of up under this city or this place, it bears pressures on you that you weren't expecting to happen. So now me and you came skip to my Lou, my darling, into this new space, not realizing the levels of pressures that were part of this space called Houston, i.e. this space called marriage. So when you come into marriage, there are pressures that are involved in marriage that are not involved in a relationship prior to marriage. And my point is you love a person, but you've been loving them. You came to love them before you were induced or introduced to these other issues or concerns. Remember, marriage came about based upon obligation to take care of the community. That's the historical context which marriage came out of. And now we don't have those same considerations most of the time. Because you got to remember, and you can do a little research. You can see the first marriage contract you can find that's on record was in Mesopotamia in 4500 BC. And it was clear what it was requiring. It was requiring to take care of a woman that was betrothed to you or brought to you with a dowry by another family to take care of that woman, not to love that woman. It was never created for love. And then later on in the New Testament of the Bible, for instance, you have Paul talking to the church about loving your wife, because the concept was, why am I telling a group of people to love their wife? Because that was never a condition of marriage. It never was. You know what I'm saying? The whole kind of romantic love in marriage is something that came about way later, because if you even look in from the biblical days back before Christ, David, Solomon, a lot of the loves of their lives were not even their wives. And I mean wives, because some of them had several wives. So the whole concept of marriage has always been an institution that never was based upon the concept of love. But it does have a lot of obligations to the state.
I want to pause you right there, and we're going to go to a commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to pick up on this history lesson.
It is important for you to get your healthy dose of the Bree Life Radio Show, because when you miss the Bree Life Radio Show, you miss moments like this.
And of course, there's those of them that get married for holy matrimony. They got married for holy matrimony.
And this.
The reason why a certain group of women attract themselves to internet dating is so that they can lie, and lie.
We can't forget about this.
I had a stalker. I had to get an order of protection. You got a woman that you've been with for 7 years, so you do it. You're doing something right.
Come on, please. Don't look. Stop it.
It's real talk about real life. Inhale and breathe light.
So let's take that deep breath in, because we're about to go in.
It's the Breathe Life Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. Catch us at blogtalkradio.com/Breathe Life.
And we're back. So, Brother Wade, please resume our history lesson tonight.
Well, again, it might be history, but my point, I guess, to just bring it into today, the reality is that marriage and love is somewhat of a, and when I say a recent construct, I'm talking about in the eons of history, it's not something that was ever a must. You didn't have to love anyone to marry. But in our way of wanting to adopt this or adapt to this, we want to require this level of love, which, you know, I say PCA, passion, care, and attention. However, realities of marriage come in real quick, because when you're dating somebody and you're not really happy with what's going on with them, and you decide that this is not what you're liking and you're not really liking this, what happens is you stop dating them and you move on. Now, some people say, well, you should work at it harder. Well, here's the reality. If there's too much, and you've said this, I think, before, if there's too much work at it, if I'm working that hard to try to make something work, then why am I doing this? So imagine you're not dating them anymore. You're married to them. And you have the same feeling that you had for John when you broke up with John, the guy that you dated before, that you didn't like anymore, and you decided you didn't want to. What do you do with that? You may say, like some people, depending on how strong your traditional underpinnings are, I'm going to stay. I'm going to stick and stay because I made a commitment. I made a vow. Back to what you said, the vow. The vow is an oath to stay in this regardless. But you don't do anything else like that. So why would you do that? And so my issue with marriage is, you know, people are moving around, as we talk about, more often for various reasons. But because marriage seems to traditionally been about obligation, and coincidentally, the weird part about it is the number of marriages, and we can start looking at, you know, it's messing with me about statistics, but the majority of marriages that people are dissolving or getting divorced from are initiated by women, not men. So why are women so unhappy? Why are they so unhappy with the arrangement? I don't know. I can say this. Traditionally, it didn't support them, meaning it might financially support them, but because women are somewhat emotional creatures and emote and want to be touched and loved and feel, that institution didn't really help them. It helped them from a security standpoint and financial standpoint, but it didn't really do that. And so seeing as though you have more women that are able to take care of themselves, they're not asking for you to take care of them. So now marriage and its ability to sustain itself is based upon a whole different paradigm. And that shift in a paradigm, I think, has a lot to do with why you see more divorces.
I see. Okay. Well, listeners, I'm sure that if either you agree with Mark from Houston, Texas, or you disagree with Mark from Houston, Texas, we at the Bree Life Radio Show would love to hear from you. So you could do so by calling in to 424-220-1862. That call-in number is 424-220-1862. And we will be glad to bring you on the line and to have a one-on-one discussion with our beloved Mark from Houston, Texas. You know what? Let's not marinate on marriage so much right now. I have another interesting topic for us to discuss while we're waiting for our caller. Oh, actually, I think we have a caller from 832-443 that wants to get on. We'll bring that caller on and see if he or she has anything to say about what's been said so far. Peace and blessings.
Hi, Bree. This is Gigi from Houston.
Hello, Gigi.
Hi,
and welcome
conversation.
To the show. I love when there's sister power. The estrogen levels go up on the barometer here. What's going on?
I'm listening to Mr. Mark.
I'm sure you have.
And he makes it sound like love and marriage is something you concoct in a petri dish. There's no science to it. There's no formula to it, and that's what I'm hearing.
Gigi, would you mind, you know, this is sisterly love going on here at the Bree Life Radio Show, so, you know, can I ask you a personal question?
You can ask.
Okay. That's fair. Could you tell me about what age range you're in?
48.
Okay. Could you tell me what zodiac sign you happen to fall under?
Cancer.
Oh, see, I knew when you got on the line, I was really feeling your vibration. I am a sister Cancerian myself.
Bless your hearts.
Yeah, bless our hearts. Okay, Gigi, give it to him. What is it that you really, really, really have the biggest discord about what he said so far this evening about marriage?
Yeah, I started it out by saying it because it makes it sound so calculated, and certain elements of it are very purposeful and, again, it's just some kind of weird science project we're putting together in this petri dish. And if the elements work together well, it works. And if it doesn't. But any relationship, and this is what I heard too, was people not wanting to put in the work. And we know that to be true, but any relationship takes work, not just marriages.
Bear in mind, Mark tends to speak for me from time to time, and he's not always accurate, okay? And I said, when I made that statement, I said that there are some people, both men and women, who tend not to want to put the work in. I'm with you.
Right.
I realize that any relationship, whether it's matrimonial or committed, that
mm-hmm.
work is required. What I did say, though, is that there is certain type of work, there's a certain type of or level of work that I'm just not willing to do anymore. But only because I know myself better, because I'm in my mid-40s.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived enough life. I've made enough mistakes. I've loved, been in love, hurt people, been hurt, all of that. So where I am in this place and time, like a lot of us who are in our 40s and 50s, we should have did everything wrong, and now we should do better because we know better. Can I get an amen?
Well, I'm going to take just a little bit of issue with that, because I don't care how old you are, we should all be in a state where we're always open and willing to grow and learn from past relationships, past experience, that type
mm-hmm.
of thing. So
right.
My take on it is that I'm going to take what went wrong before,
mm-hmm.
acknowledge my responsibility in it, and
right.
try to do better the next time. And believe me, that
but
is
you know better.
To be work. Right.
Right. Doing better because you know better.
And that is a conscious effort.
Right.
For, on my part, it is a very conscious effort for
mm-hmm.
me to say, okay, instead of reacting Gigi style, which has proven not to work in the past,
mm-hmm.
let me take a minute here before I just react. So that in itself I consider work.
Yeah, yeah, I do understand.
That is work, because being a Cancer, I'm a very emotional, very sensitive woman.
Yeah.
Very. And
yeah.
so because I'm so emotionally driven, my first reaction is to react.
Right.
But it may not be the best thing to do. And that
mm-hmm.
I've learned. But still, and I'm just saying that to say in my late 40s that I'm still a work in progress. So I can still learn from things and take that and try to do better in whatever situation presents itself. But, you know, going back to the relationship part of it and the work part of it, it's a gimme. And so I heard Mr. Mark said it say that sometimes you just don't – I know I'm a little sarcastic – but sometimes you just don't want to put in the work. And I think at the point in time that you're in a relationship and you decide – I don't want to put the work in anymore, then it's a done deal.
That's
it,
right.
It's done at that point. Once you acknowledge to yourself, I just don't want to work at it anymore. But just
mm-hmm.
think about it. What you're going to take to your next relationship is going to be, I'm not willing to work.
That's right.
So what? Guess what's going to happen in that next relationship? The same thing. So it goes
mm-hmm.
back to that saying of how do we continue to do the same things over and over again and expect different results?
Yeah, I'm
ludicrous because that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to take a commercial break, and then stay on the line, Gigi. Don't hang up. I want Mark to respond to what you've had to say, but first we're going to go to our commercial break.
Breathe Life Radio is a grassroots radio show offering a voice to everyday people. It is without a doubt that this service is a pleasure for we at Breathe Life to provide. However, this service comes at a cost. For us to continue to provide this valuable outlet to the community, we need your support. Join us as we raise funds to keep Breathe Life Radio streaming while we provide assistance to Public School 161 in Brooklyn, New York. 15% of all funds raised will go towards providing school supplies to the students of this necessary and vital educational institution. You can find more information about our fundraiser on the web at brilife.evenbright.com. That's brilife.evenbright.com.
And we're back. We're being joined tonight by our beloved Mark in Houston, Texas. And we've also been joined by Gigi in Houston, Texas. So welcome back. Mark, do you have anything? Well, before you start, I just want to let everyone know you can join us in the chat room. Just click on the link to engage the chat room box, and we're talking. So if you have a question, you don't want to call in, just, you know, type it, and I'll read it to our audience. So, Mark, please, you have anything to say?
Well, yeah, I mean, I heard what Ms. Gigi had to say, and I heard what you had to say, and it's a beautiful thing. I mean, I still don't know how to address my issue with marriage and the Petri dish, as she put it, because here's the thing.
Ask a question? You know, I don't mind letting people know that I don't know certain things. What's a Petri dish?
Oh, you don't remember being in science class? You don't remember
science class?
You know, you put the little culture thing in it, and then you see if your eyes going to react to the... Yeah,
I'm sorry.
That kind of thing. So, yeah,
not in science.
It's kind of similar to an incubator, or it's kind of a place where you find out where organisms can behave and grow in a little, in a certain environment.
Okay, come on. We just went from history to now we're going to science. Let's keep it light on the Free Life Radio Show for a freestyle. Come on, Mark. Help me.
Okay. Yeah, the Petri dish. Hey, check this out. Here's my thing. My thing is this. That still didn't address the whole point of the fact is this. Marriage is a commitment that's based upon an agreement, and when that agreement, you don't like it or feel it no more, then you want to breach it. The difference is there are many more hoops to walking out of a marriage when you ain't feeling it than it is when you have been with John for 2 years or 2 months or however long, and you decide you don't want to do it no more, and you just part ways. There are considerations, unfortunately or fortunately, however you want to look at it, to having more vested or at stake to walking away when you're in a marriage than you are in a relationship where you do not have so much commingled. So my only point is that, but the same feelings that you have when you don't like what John did are there. The same ones, meaning when John, pre-marriage and during marriage, you still feel the way you feel.
Mm-hmm.
So now that you feel the way you feel, and Gigi talked about it being so, you know, Petri dishes. Well, first of all, it is an experiment. Every relationship is an experiment, and we can report back later to see how well it went. So in a sense, it is a Petri dish. And the reality is this. If you want to look at it from the Petri dish standpoint, before marriage, it was in one state. When you cross the threshold, jump the broom, whatever the case may be, you're in another space now. Now let's see how that same bacteria is reacting in that Petri dish now that you introduce something different. You see what I'm saying? Which goes back to what I was talking about, barometric pressure or anything else. The reality is that when you introduce a different element, now you're going to try the same thing is going to have to be able to see how it reacts in this new environment. And the reality is marriage is not the same environment that dating is. It's just not. It ain't the same environment. And any of
us
who have been married,
we know that marriage is not the same environment. As a matter of fact, it's not supposed to be. It's not supposed to be.
But guess what? You're still Sabrina. You're still Gigi. I'm still Mark. So now we got a different environment, but the same person. So now we can really find out how it's going to be. I'll give you an example back to the whole thing. I came from Minnesota, and in Minnesota, we only have, basically, to be honest, we don't have to deal with pollen and allergens and all that garbage. We just don't have to deal with that, okay, for the most part. We have two seasons where you might see that in. But because we have such a hard freeze, we kill pretty much all that damn bacteria and stuff. Come to Houston, stuff don't die down here. So here's the thing. The same old Mark, his body is reacting a totally different way in Houston. The same old Mark. Now he's trying to figure ways to make adjustments. Mark didn't have allergies year-round. Mark has allergies year round now.
Please, Mark, please. What the hell does allergens have to do with marriage? Please.
I take issue with the analogy of the analogy of environmental things and climate and sickness and comparing that to a commitment you make in a marriage.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. Actually, I heard Bree say it, and you got marriage is a different environment than dating. You said it was, Bree. You know it is, Gigi. So, the environment of marriage is different than the environment of dating. So, you saying, oh, well, it's still me. But hell, I'm not in that environment. Once I go into that different environment of marriage, now the Mark that was able to do or feel certain ways prior to that, he's being tested in a way he didn't know he was going to be tested, maybe. He didn't know. He didn't know how he was going to react to that. Because, see, you all talk about it as if it ain't no difference. Oh, well, you're married. One day you're not married. Today you are married. And then marriage ain't no different than dating. But we know better. We know better.
But how about this, Mark? Because I can buy that along the lines of someone getting into a first-time marriage, which when you get married, it's supposed to be for a lifetime. But let's just be real. That's just not the way it is these days. So I can buy that for the first-time marriage person. But for the person who is marrying again, whatever that number is, the person who's marrying again, they know exactly what they're getting into. So then now what? So what's the argument then when you already know what to expect when you get married? Because you've been there, done that.
Well, here's the argument. Here's the argument then. The issue is this. You go into marriage thinking that the second time, for instance, you think it's going to be different.
Or the third time, right.
See, you purpose for it to be different. But here's the thing that you ain't considering. You broke up with somebody because of behaviors you had and the individual you were dealing with. Now you got a new person. Now you just might want to think, whether you want to be honest or not, you might want to think the reason you divorced the first time is because Gigi was horrible. So now you get with somebody else. Come up with a name for me, y'all. Give me a woman.
Who?
Claire.
Bridget.
Keep it simple.
Who, Claire? Claire. Okay. So then it didn't work with Gigi, so you go to Claire. So now you got Claire. Claire's here. I'm here with Claire. All right. So now that I'm here with Claire, I say, well, man, I learned a lesson from dealing with Gigi, I thought. But see, here's the problem. The problem is I'm thinking the first time, because it may take me two or three relationships or marriages to figure this out. So the first time I thought it was Gigi issue. Now, so I figured that I can still be who I am because the problem wasn't me, it was Gigi. So now I start running and bumping heads with Claire. So it's a good chance I'm going to be on my third marriage now. Why? Because this ain't working and I still ain't got it yet. And guess what? You get it when you get it. Unfortunately, you get it when you get it. And see, I can promise you the majority of us have been in more than two committed relationships, whether it was marriage or not. And some of us clearly have been in more than one marriage. Why? So the women might say, because the men were knuckleheads. The men might say, because the women didn't get it. Whatever the reason being, we didn't get it. We're moving on. My point is, in marriage, the stakes are much higher. Right, but the stakes are different. Here's what I'm saying. Y'all say, well, Mark, how are you going to use the environmental difference between Houston and Minnesota? Clearly, you know and I know it's a different environment when you're married than when you're not married. And your ability to move on and what you have to consider is totally different. Because guess what? When you're not married, it's 100% matters of the heart. When you're married, it's not just matters of the heart. It's matters of finances. It's economics. It's all kind of little different things.
I have to interject there because when you're in a committed relationship. I have to say this. When you're in a committed relationship, depending on how deep that commitment is, and if you are living together and you're commingling money and all that stuff mm-hmm. that you're advised not to do when you're living with somebody, you do have to – there are other things other than matters of the heart that should be taken into consideration.
Mm-hmm. But what you don't have to do,
So
Bree, what you don't have to do, Bree and Gigi, is you ain't got
to
go to the court
to say
work
that
it
the
out.
Climate then is different, because it's very much the same with the exception of that piece of paper. Let's hear from
Gigi.
Bree,
let me tell you something about that piece of paper in the state of Texas. You don't need it. Because there's a certain thing called common law marriage in Texas. And if you are living with someone, I've been common law married, so I can speak to this. When you're living with someone, you are presenting yourself as a couple. The state of Texas recognizes that as common law marriage.
Gigi, let me ask you a question. How long does one have to live with another to be considered common law in Texas?
You know, I could be wrong, but I don't think there is a certain time limit. What the law does state is if you present yourself as a married couple, because, and I'll just tell you, I had a long-term relationship with someone.
In what manner? If you introduce yourself to someone, this is my husband, this is my wife, or if you go to a municipality and put it in a legal document that we recognize,
You don't need the legalities of it. You just represent yourself as husband and wife. But you never went to the courthouse, and the preacher never married you, and you don't have that document. You don't have it. Texas recognizes recognizes it as common law marriage. And I'm telling you, because in common law marriage, you know, in most marriages in most states, you can't add somebody to your employee health insurance unless you're legally married. In the state of Texas, you can.
Okay.
Say that one more time. No, you can't. Say something one more time. Say that one more time.
In the state of Texas, you can add someone onto your health insurance, and you don't have that piece of paper.
Really?
Really.
Jeez.
Jerry, coming again? Can I say something now?
Okay, sure. I see your hand up. Go on.
Is that you? All right. Gigi, is that? I'm going to tell you, Gigi is so right about what she says. Because, first of all, I haven't been in the scenario, so I understand it. But
long is it, Mark?
Let me tell you how it works. You have to present yourself in public before witnesses, and you have to say, for instance, if it was me and Gigi, I walked down and said, Mr. and Mrs. Wade. If I go to a hotel and do that, or if I introduce her into a crowd and she agrees to that introduction, we have now presented ourselves. If I say this is my wife and she said no, I'm not, it don't count. If I go by a car and say she's Mr. and Mrs. Wade, she signs her name like that, we are. But if she doesn't, it don't count. So this is the difference. I've been living up for 20 years, and we are never considered common law married unless we present ourselves in public. But here's the thing. When I present myself in public, if I want a divorce, I still gotta present proof that I have done it already. So that means I'm going to need a witness or some witnesses that will corroborate what I said. Okay? Mm-hmm. So if you don't have that, you're not married. But here's my point. My point is that's still a deliberate action saying that you're married. So living with somebody does not mean you're common law married in the state of Texas. But yes, the state of Texas does recognize common law marriage. But here's something else that you don't know about common law marriage in the state of Texas. If you are gone from that marriage or gone from that living with that person for over 2 years and you can prove it, you don't even need a divorce. You don't even need a divorce. But within that 2 year period, if she decides to come and say, we did whatever, now we have to go through the court. Whether we have a lawyer or we do a pro se, we can do that. But after 2 years, it don't make a difference. Once I'm not there, if I'm absent from that domicile and we're not coexisting and commingling, and I can prove that we haven't done it for 2 years, I ain't married to her.
Hold on. We're going to go and take a commercial break. And then when we come back, Mark is going to finish up his thought, and then I'm going to give it back over to Gigi. Hold on. We are taking a a brief break. This is the Bree Life Radio Show.
If you didn't tune into the Bree Life Radio Show on Wednesday, this is what you missed.
Hey, Mark, check it out, Mark. If they give it up too easy sometimes, I mean, if vagina was a stock, it would plummet. It would plummet.
Mm.
Because you give it away too easy.
You hear that, ladies? There is a brother on the line that's saying that the ladies are giving it up too easy.
And this?
We want a lot more than sex, too. We want to be loved. We want to be respected.
Mm-hmm.
We want a whole lot of that will make the sexual experience that much more enhanced.
We can't forget about this.
Tony, you heard that. Do you know she's taking the easy way out of this one? You know what could happen. Come on, Bree.
Wow. No, listen. I say you have to be honest. You have to be honest with your partner of what the deal breakers are.
It's real talk about real life. Inhale and breathe light.
No, we breathing light. We ain't breathing heavy now. Right.
It's the Bree Life Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. Catch us at blogtalkradio.com/ Bree Life.
What you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree Life.
How we live in life.
Hey.
Yes, yes, yes. We are definitely breathing light. We ain't breathing heavy, baby. You have reached the Bree Life Radio Show, and it is Freestyle Thursdays. And right now I'm joined with, again, our beloved Mark from Houston, Texas. And we have a special guest caller tonight, Gigi, who is also, ironically enough, in Houston, Texas. Thank you. Thank you both for joining us tonight.
Absolutely.
And we are, and we're freestyling, and Gigi and Mark's freestyle right now is about marriage, and marriage in Houston, Texas, common law. So let's continue. Mark, you were going to finish up a thought, and then we're turning it over to Gigi.
Oh, I don't know what the thought was. I mean, it's, yeah, marriage in Houston, Texas.
Damn.
It's all good. I mean, you know, all of a sudden. Yeah, right. You know what I'm saying? It's something else. But, hey, I guess ultimately, you know, when it comes to marriage, and all I was saying prior to we got on this whole thing about common law marriage and all that other kind of stuff is this, is that at the end of the day, when it comes to relationships, and think about this. Marriage, they're talking about divorce rates. The divorce rates don't, they're not calculating how many people are breaking up from long-term committed relationships. They're just talking about the legal relationships. I got a funny feeling that divorces are in a high rise. Then there's got to be a high rise in committed long-term relationships breaking up as well. Because people break up when they ain't happy about something, whether it be they self or their situation. That's why they break up. So all I'm saying is this. When you get into a marriage and your perception, whether I agree with it or not, the bottom line is this. The only deterrent to marriage is the same reason that it's attractive. Besides I love you, because I can love you without marrying you. But here's the thing. When you're talking about marriage, you're talking about commingling.
Yeah.
As far as benefits and monies and stuff like that. And that's one of the reasons wanting to do it and one of the reasons not wanting to do it. So that's the issue, which makes it a question, because it ain't got nothing to do with love once it breaks up. Because now we sound like Tina Turner when it's time to go. What love got to do with it? Not a damn thing. Mark said.
Okay, I got to stop you there. And before I let Gigi take it, I'm just going to say, you know, the callers and the listeners, please call in 424-220-1862. You can also join our chat room, and you can find us at www.blogtalkradio.com/Bree Life and join us in the chat room. Also, one other thing I want to say. I've heard our beloved Mark say one time, or more than one time actually, that he believes a man should take care of man and a woman should take care of herself. He don't believe in taking care of nobody. What do you think about that, listeners? Call in 424-2018.
Right.
I think.
Yeah, man, no, no.
I think.
Oh,
and listen,
God.
You need some more estrogen on the line, even though I love Sister Gigi here. So take it away, Gigi.
Oh, my God. You know what? When you're in a relationship with someone, you take care of each other. I mean, what is the point if you're going to take care of yourself and the other person is going to take care of themselves? What's the point of being in a relationship? A relationship is about caring. It's about sharing. Hello, sharing.
It sounds like roommates to me. Because if you take care of yourself and I'm taking care of myself, they're only roommates.
But a roommate got to have a consideration. Wait a minute. A roommate got to have consideration. And when I say take care of yourself, meaning this, I'm not talking about not having consideration for the human being. But I'm saying this whole concept that I want to be when I say, come on, Sabrina, when I say take care of, you know what I mean. I'm talking about this old school concept that I'm taking care of you as opposed to not giving mutual consideration to the other person. That's what I was saying. Because that's something.
But what you're talking about, and listen, you and I have had upteen hundred thousand conversations now, and we've had knockdown dragouts about this one topic in particular. You feel that a man should take care of himself and a woman should take care of herself.
I believe that people should come into the relationship.
You're talking about fiscal responsibilities. You're not talking about, cooking, you cook your own meal and I cook my own meal, and you buy your own toiletries and I buy my own toilet. No, you're talking about overall fiscal responsibilities. You talk about splitting the middle. You talk about living like damn near a roommate. What the heck is that?
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is you need to be able to take us out. Back to one of the biggest issues.
Wonder if the person wasn't working. Stop. No, you don't get no airplay on this one. Wonder if the person wasn't working.
Okay,
would you take care of them?
What if both of them ain't working? What if both of them ain't working? Check us out.
I ain't asked you that.
Check us out.
You meet a woman, she ain't working. You meet a woman, you got a job. She not working.
Well, she ain't working.
Take care of her?
Am I mean at the homeless shelter? I mean, she's doing something.
You see what I'm talking about? You meet a woman, you're working. She's not working. Are you going to take care of her and find yourself loving her? Are you going to take care of her?
Wait a minute, Sabrina.
Damn cheap.
Stop it. Sabrina, stop it. That's not what I'm saying. That is not what I am saying. What are you saying? I'm saying, what I've been finding out, and I'm going to just expose myself a little more, I've been on internet dating. And on internet dating, if you read a lot of the profiles, women are saying overwhelmingly, I ain't looking for no man to take care of me. I'm looking for a man to come to me in a way where he cares about me, where he wants to give me attention, where he wants to give some type of consideration to the value of who I am as far as sharing and communicating with me. I ain't looking for this man that wants to take care of me barefoot, putting it. Not that I don't want consideration, because that ain't what we're talking about. When I'm talking about taking care of you, I'm talking about what you're saying. Like you just said, I'm driving down the streets, you're at a homeless shelter. I love you, baby. I'm going to bring you in my house. I'm going to take care of you.
I'm not about that. I'm not. And listen, don't talk about the people that are in a homeless shelter, because there's people with PhDs in the homeless shelter and have had
a
change of circumstances.
Wait a minute. First of all, I'm going to tell somebody else. I used to work in a homeless shelter. And
listen, we ain't talking about you working in a homeless shelter. We're not talking about you working in a homeless shelter. We are talking about you meeting somebody by chance or on the internet. You working. You got a six-digit job.
Okay.
But they're not working.
Okay.
And you spend time with this person.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, you find yourself and a giver and a receiver of PCA. For those who are just joining us, that acronym means patience.
Passion, care, and attention.
So, if that is the case, and you find yourself giving that and receiving that, and now you are becoming one. You becoming intertwined, connected, dependent mm-hmm. upon one another. And this person needs, and you want to be with this person. But this person still ain't got no job. It's 6 months later. You mean to tell me you're going to hold off? You're going to hold off making a commitment to that person because they don't have employment right now? Is that what you say?
No. And you know what? And see, here's the funny thing about it is, it's good for ratings. And it's good for you know,
no,
you know inflammatory.
I'm not talking about the ratings.
That is not the conversation we have had. I am not. I just first of all, if it's a woman I'm in love with, I'm looking out for. I'm gonna always look out for somebody I'm in love with. That's beside the point. It ain't got nothing to do. That's not what I'm saying. What I was saying
that's
to
not
you
what
is that.
You, that's not what you have said. You know it. You know
that's
it.
That's what I have said. Yes, I have. Yes, I do know it. That's what I'm saying. If you really listen to what I have said before, Sabrina, my point was this whole concept of this traditional person saying a man will take care of me, period. That's what we've had conversations about. This ain't about a person in a bad situation and I'm in love with her.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
A different story. A whole different scenario.
Gigi,
I'm in love with you.
Gigi, you've heard the rhetoric. Now speak the truth, girl. Shame the devil. Speak the truth, girl, and shame the devil. What you think about that?
I really have to go back to the point I was trying to make, which was what a relationship it should be about.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be about caring and commitment and, you know, and loving each other. And so that encompasses a whole lot of ground right there.
Mm-hmm.
So you
say that you are traditionally
one part. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I wanted to ask you, would you say that you typically follow traditional values, or do you find yourself somewhere in the middle of the road?
Oh, I'm somewhere in the middle of the road. I mean, okay. traditional values would put me back like in my grandparents' days, you
okay.
know, where Papa worked and Mama took care of the house. And it didn't matter what happened in the house. It didn't matter what happened in the house. And it didn't matter how much they fought and carried on. But they loved each other. And they were committed to each other. And they were committed to that marriage. And
right.
it took the both of them to make that work. Because just because he brought the money home doesn't mean that her contribution was insignificant. Because she took care of the home. She took care of the kids, five kids. She took care of grandkids. And that type of love and commitment I wish I could see today, because 1 year after my grandmother died, my grandfather died.
Mm.
He didn't want to live without her. And when I say they fought like cat and dog.
That's usually how it works out. You know, when you have a couple that's been married for a long time, one goes and then the other goes pretty much right behind them.
Now, that's that caring. That's that commitment. That's that sharing. That's that kind of thing is what made marriages work back then. Where today, you know, and I've been married before, but today we're so quick to say, you're just not acting right. I'm out of here.
Well, wait a minute.
And move on to the next one.
Here's the thing about this. Marriage or no marriage, if you care, and you want to be, and it's making sense for you, you're going to do it. The reality is this: as we romanticize these old school relationships, as we call them or have been called, the reality is that a lot of it had to do with the fact that the woman was dependent on that man. The reality
No, that's not true.
That is the same.
Because both of my grandparents came from money. So my grandmother did not have to stay there because she was dependent upon him. She chose to stay there.
Okay. I'm going to say it again, Gigi. I'm going to say it again. You just talked about the reality of an old school relationship. It was very common for the woman to be taken care of by the man and to be at home. We are not in that age anymore. We're just not in that age. That's what I'm saying. So therefore, by not being in that age, we're dealing with women that clearly are saying, I can take care of my damn self. So if I stay here, it ain't going to be out of you taking care of me. It's going to be about you caring about me.
Okay, let me ask you something. When you've read those profiles on the internet dating sites, I don't need a man to take care of me, blah, 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 blah. What did you typically think every time you read that? What was your overall thought when you saw something like that?
Hell, I don't even know. I don't even know what I thought. I didn't really think about it.
Okay,
be honest,
well, right now, let's say you looked a profile right now and it said that. What would your first thought, what do you think your first thought would be? What would come to mind?
The first thought would come to mind is that, you know what, this woman can take care of herself and she really wants me in her life because she wants me to care about her. She wants me for the emotional, spiritual interaction. That's what she wants. She's not looking for me to take care of her.
But when you take her out, she's looking for you to pick up that check.
Well, guess what? Can I say something?
Can I say something?
But wait a minute.
So we can talk about taking care of, but women still, in the traditional sense, want a man to be a man.
But Gigi, can I say something, sweetheart? I'm gonna keep it real with you. The honest thing is, I have been taken out.
I've taken a man out before, though.
All right, then. So that's what I'm saying. I ain't tripping. When you took him out, you didn't take him out expecting him to do nothing. Did you took him out?
Yeah. You know what? How? Guess what? Let's think about this, Gigi. How wild would it be for us to take a guy out? And, you know, we didn't spend $200 at dinner. And then we walk up to the door and be like, you know.
No, ma'am.
What's up?
That's my entire conversation for that question. No, ma'am. No. The times that I picked up a tab, we were already in the mix, and he didn't pick the tab up so many times. I'm like, I'm going to give a brother a break tonight.
Oh, okay.
No, that's real.
On that note, we're going to take, I think we need to breathe light on that note.
Yes,
but we're going to take about a 30-second pause, and we're going to come back.
Yeah.
Okay?
It's the Breed Life Show.
You gotta turn on.
When Breed Life's up,
you gotta turn on.
It's the Breed Life Show.
You gotta turn her on. The Breed Life. You gotta turn her on.
It's the Breed Life Show.
You gotta turn her on.
When Breed Life's up,
you gotta turn her on.
It's the Breed Life Show.
You gotta turn her on. The Breed Life. You gotta turn her on.
Tune in Wednesday and Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, for real talk about real life. Inhale and breathe light. It's the Breathe Life Radio Show on blogtalkradio.com/BRILIFE.
It's the Breathe Life Show.
And we are back. It's the Breathe Life Radio Show, and tonight we are being joined by, again, our beloved Mark from Houston, Texas. And we have a special guest, Gigi, also in Houston, Texas, and we're talking about marriage, we're talking about relationships, we're talking about a lot of stuff. And we're at the top of our hour. I want to give each one of our panelists like two minutes to give rebuttals to each other's ideologies. And then we're being joined by a special guest, Dr. Jeremiah Hackley. So, Gigi, you want to take this time to give it to Brother Wade?
Sure. I'll just say this, and, you know, this is just my own personal beliefs, but I'm the traditionalist in relationships where I do believe there are some definitive roles for each person. However, I am a modern woman as well, so I just think that commitment and sharing, and I mean, those are things that you just can't calculate. You can't make it a science, because it's not a science, and it just takes a certain level of commitment and maturity probably more than commitment, immaturity mm-hmm. in the guy to say, okay, this is what I want to do, and I'm going to make that commitment to it, and I'm going to be mature enough to stand by my commitment.
Okay.
So that's my take on it.
All right, Gigi, and you're not going anywhere. You're going to continue to join us tonight, right?
Yeah, I'm going to hang in there as long as I can.
Okay, darling. Hang in as long as you can. I want to thank you. And you have been, listen, you have been baptized. You are a part of the Bree Life Radio experience, and we hope to hear more from you, Gigi. Please continue to listen and definitely call in because, you know, I tend to be a little outnumbered out here. You know, we have Gail in Minnesota, Snapping Turtle, we call her now, calling in most of the time. But it would be nice if we had an additional woman, and I mean a real woman on our team. So, you know, you have been blessed and indoctrinated, and we hope to hear from you soon again. Mark, what do you have to say about what Gigi has said?
Hey, all I got to say is love, sex, and longevity. I'm done.
Oh, geez. Okay. Well, listen, we are about to amp the fire up. We're about to set it off. We have a very, very interesting dialogue about to take place. And I'm just going to say a few words, and then we will begin the second half of our show.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you have tuned into the Bree Life Radio Show Freestyle Thursday, where we inhale and breathe life. We have a treat, folks, and sincerely, people, I think you're going to love this one. We are going to be discussing affairs of the heart in living color. We are discussing social programming and the Willie Lynch page for the first hour. And in this corner, weighing in with his book, The Letter, Hackley's exhaustive commentary on the Willie Lynch letter, coming from the shores of the Potomac, the chocolate city, and a stone's throw away from the Oval Office. It's Dr. Jeremiah Hackley. And in this corner, weighing in with this book, Mark said it, The Journey of a Man Through a Dark Room. And Mark said it in under a minute. Now residing in the Bayou City of Houston. Houston, we have a problem. Mark from Houston.
This is the moment we've all been waiting for.
And that's right, people. Dr. Hackley, have you joined us, Dr. Hackley?
Yes, Dr. Hackley is here. Yes, he is.
Okay. Peace and blessings, brother.
Peace and blessings to you, Bree. I love
and tonight,
that intro.
You know, I'm going to take license to call you Jeremiah.
Yeah, go ahead and call me Jeremiah.
All right.
That's a good thing to do tonight, yes.
Okay. Well, you know, as we all know, we are going to have a dialogue about race and the Willie Lynch letter and a few other topics. I want a clean fight. I want no punching below the belt unless your pants are falling down. I want you to go back to your corners and come out swinging.
How you doing over here?
Yes, yes. I am amazed at the intro. That was a phenomenal intro, and we're gonna go ahead and get started. I'm ready.
How you doing, Brother Jeremiah?
I am excellent, Brother Wade. How are you, man?
I'm well. I'm doing really well. Glad to have you. I'm glad to be here with you.
Yes, sir. It is.
Well, Mark,
I want you to start
by, I guess, addressing some of the questions that you felt that weren't touched on in our first of the three-part series, What It Is to Be Black in America Now.
Well, first of all, I want to say this first. Number one, I haven't had the opportunity to purchase a book, and as a fellow author, I definitely believe in supporting our brothers and sisters out here that are writing. Because our brother Hackley said something on the first show. At the end of the first show, he said something to the effect that he encourages everybody to write down and document their story, their feelings, their beliefs. Because it's valid, and it really is, and especially in this day and age of the internet and desktop publishing, and even dictation programs. They have dictation programs where you can actually talk into a microphone your story, and it'll turn it into an actual document. So, he said that I thought that was a very refreshing thing to hear, because I think we need to document our story, because that's what it's all about. So people that come behind us, and even those who are here with us now, can get a view into a life that's probably very much like theirs, because as much as people think we're different, we have a lot in common, so to speak. But when I was thinking about the shows in the past, what came to my mind was this. And again, I want Dr. Hackley to know that I'm kind of a satirical character. Sometimes I can be tongue-in-cheek. No disrespect, but kind of be tongue in cheek a little bit. And I was thinking about the Willie Lynch letter, and I did this thing which eventually I'm going to put out there in one of my Mark said it segments. But it was about the Willie Lynch letter as a cure all. Number one. Number two. Sometimes when it's presented, it's like if you read the Willie Lynch letter, you're gonna be saved. You're gonna be emancipated. Just read that letter. You know what I'm saying? And I laugh, not so much I laugh, because I used to teach a life skill class, because basically most of my life, adult life, has been in social services and working with homeless and runaway youth and so forth and so on, and most of them have been African-Americans. So therefore, I definitely understand the value of history. One of the things that I had always had to deal with about the Willie Lynch letter, it evokes irritation by some and, vindications for others, because people read it, and it's kind of really like, wow, somebody actually said that. But here's the thing. From a historical standpoint, there's even no proof that it actually ever existed, and it didn't show up until, like, the 90s, first of all, as far as all the research that I've ever done, although I think it is a quite interesting read, and it is an insight into how somebody may have thought. The weird part about it is that if you read writers like Frederick Douglass, which are verifiable writers, they talked about what the slavery experience was with firsthand accounts. And the fact that slaveholders had the desire to control slaves is no secret, first of all. But a longstanding 300-year conspiracy, that's kind of questionable to me, so to speak. The primary usage, though, that most of the various books that you could read, from Lerone Bennett's Before the Mayflower to several other books, they really document a lot about how Christianity was used to control slaves. Now, whether we believe they actually pitted one against the other and all that kind of stuff, that's kind of fine, and it's kind of dramatic, so to speak. But again, I would love somebody to be able to even verify that. But more importantly, my issue with the whole issue of the Willie Lynch thing is this, is that if an arbiter of any kind of system continued to do that, and we look at that arbiter of that system and that system being toxic, it's almost impossible for the arbiter of that type of system not to be affected, number one. Number two, Dr. Hackley said something that I remember he said about the fact that when we were talking about the whole issue of he didn't put a whole lot of energy into the issue of dating as far as dating black or another color. It was interesting. He said, I don't think it's a race issue as much as it is a justice issue, which I 100% agree. Because if we recall, the series that you were running on the Bree Life Network, the Blog Talk Bree Life Radio Network, was on what does it mean to be black in America. And this was my thing. I listened to all three. I was part of the first one and the subsequent two, and no one really talked about that whole issue anyway. And Dr. Hackney made a statement. He says, the color of our skin is not our problem. The color of our skin is someone else's problem that they have with us, which is quite interesting because we never really discussed what it means to be black in America, and I almost felt like because we really couldn't discuss that because I don't know that we can come to any agreement on what it does mean to be black in America. So in any case, while I do understand some of the principles and some of the unbelievably inflammatory things that is written in the Willie Lynch letter, you know, and trust me, if you read it, and I've read it, I've studied it, I've taught it, and it's crazy when you start looking at the whole issue, like, it does make it feel like, man, could this be really going on? And he did say, or whoever wrote the letter, he said that for 300 years, at least 300 years. So some people make a big, I've been hearing some people, not Dr. Hackley actually, but I've been hearing some other people make a lot of noise about this would be the 300 years. But he said, if you read the letter, it said at least 300 years. So he felt whoever wrote, or he, she, or whoever wrote this letter, they felt the durability of this letter could easily far surpass the whole concept of 300 years if it was put together. But like I said again, if you start studying, like I've looked at, and I've done a little study, if you look at some of the things that are written out there, you will see there's a lot to be said for maintaining strict discipline, instilling beliefs of inferiority in the master power system, so to speak, you know, and accepting standards of good conduct and actually complimenting the good conduct. That kind of stuff is there. The concept of Uncle Tomism, that was there too. But some real intricate system of pitting this against that, I don't even know if they were, those white people were that advanced to even think of that because they did a lot of stupid stuff. They had numbers on their side and so forth. So that's kind of how I look at it. So.
Dr. Hackley?
Yes.
Or Jeremiah?
Jeremiah, when we're in the ring, babe. Dr. Hackley, when we get out of the ring.
Okay.
But
Jeremiah.
I'm stepping into the ring tonight.
Step up to the mic.
Okay. So I have great respect for my brother Mark Wade because anybody who is willing to ask questions or question the answers will get a deeper understanding of what the meaning of an answer is or expand the meaning of the answer or provide another answer. So I have great respect for his questioning of some of the things that I said on the last show or the show for the last couple of weeks. And I want to respond holistically to two of his first points that he made when he was talking. First of all, the verification of the Willie Lynch letter. If you purchase the book and you read and you begin reading it, let me say it this way. I've taken the book and I've broken the letter down into 247 verses and 9 chapters so that somebody can systematically study the letter in their own time. I have 247 dimensions of commentary on the Willie Lynch letter, 247 scriptures that deal with the concept of each verse, 247 life application instructions on how to take the thing back and to oppose whatever dimension of the culture is being degraded in the community. And so you're going to get that in it, and then also 247 power thoughts from other thinkers, philosophers, any you know, scientists, you know, biology. It deals with many different dimensions. I try to make sure that it's not just my mind or my opinion that's in the book. I try to respond to the symptoms of the plague in our culture with a theory that is, some of it is a couple of hundred years old. You hear Frederick Douglass in there. You hear people that were here 200 years ago. You hear people that were 100 years ago. You hear people that are here the last 30 and 40 years, like Dick Gregory, Cornel West, and some of the people that we're aware of. But there is a I do have to respond to the verification of the letter. There is a friend of mine who is on my friends list. by the name of Ronald Deering. Ronald Deering is a very light-skinned man who is the great-grandson of Brigadier General James Deering. Brigadier General James Deering was the last Civil War general to die in the Civil War, the last general to die in the Civil War. You can go and research it online, and Brother Deering, of course, can tell you a little bit more about this particular issue. But there is a place in Virginia called Alta Vista, Virginia, the area Alta Vista and some other things. And what was in this location is a place called the Deering Plantation. Brigadier General Deering married a woman by the name of Catherine Lynch. Catherine Lynch was the daughter of the founder of the place called Lynchburg in Virginia. And this all dates back to around the 1700s, 1600s, 1800s. You'll find a whole bunch of history. They have a museum in the Alta Vista area. I'm not exactly sure what the address is, but they have a museum that says that the Lynch family plantation and the Deering family plantation were next to each other, and the inheriting of the land was passed down through the generations through the Deerings. And so Catherine Lynch was someone who inherited family from her ancestors Lynch, and Deering, of course, was of his ancestors when we're dealing with the Deerings. But the Deerings family were slaves that were owned by Mr. Deering, who were one of the few slaves that received the land in the emancipation. They received their land. They were actually deeded the land in the will, and they received their land, and they received land so much so that they were able to trace their history back to the plantation and who their slave owner was. Long story short, there is a museum now that lists all of that particular information. But this is what's significant about the Deering and the Lynch Plantation, which is now called Lynchburg, Virginia. It's called Lynchburg, Virginia. Lynchburg, Virginia, is nestled on the north side of the James River, and with the James River, it goes to three different places. The James River goes to Lynchburg, Virginia. It flows down to a corner called Scottsville, Virginia, where I lived and I began to do some of this writing. Scottsville, Virginia, is where the river bends at Scottsville, and then it goes down to Richmond, goes south to Richmond. It flows south to Richmond. And so you have Lynchburg, you have Scottsville, Virginia as the second point, and then you have Richmond. Scottsville was the Confederate hospital. It was the home of the Confederates. It's the place where they were taken when, of course, they got in trouble. It's also the birthplace of what is now called Charlottesville, Virginia, which is now the primary place where University of Virginia is located, and some other colleges, Martha Jefferson Hospital, UVA Hospital, are there for those listeners that are in the Virginia area. The significance of Scottsville is still today a town that as recent as I've been there, it's been maybe 2 or 3 years since I've been there, but they 2 or 3 years ago they still didn't have a stoplight. I was one of the only African Americans on the Chamber of Commerce. I'm sorry, forgive me, because they use the Chamber of Commerce as their business incubator or their business located network. So the Chamber of Commerce, I was one of two African Americans on the Chamber of Commerce. The other one was a real estate developer. We stood up in a meeting. The real estate developer wanted to bring a townhome development to Scottsville, Virginia, because of the cost of living there. The former mayor was oppositional to the real estate development coming to Scottsville, because he said in the town hall meetings that bringing this real estate development, the low-income real estate development, would bring those people there. This is also the place where the Dewdrop Inn was filmed. The Walton family and the Dewdrop Inn was in this particular place I remember going in there and being the only black person to eat in there other than the cook that was in the back of the and this is 2006, 2007. These are the times that we're there, probably 2005 as well. But what
okay,
happened,
Dr. Hackley, I'm gonna have to end this round.
Okay.
We're gonna have to breathe life for a minute and we're gonna come back to round two.
Yeah, because I wanna make a
Wade.
Point. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bree Life Radio is a grassroots radio show offering a voice to everyday people. It is without a doubt that this service is a pleasure for we at Bree Life to provide. However, this service comes at a cost. For us to continue to provide this valuable outlet to the community, we need your support. Join us as we raise funds to keep Bree Life Radio streaming while we provide assistance to Public School 161 in Brooklyn, New York. 15% of all funds raised will go towards providing school supplies to the students of this necessary and vital educational institution. You can find more information about our fundraiser on the web at BreeLife.evenbright.com. That's BRIELIFE.EVENBRITE.com.
And we're back. You reached the Bree Life Radio Show. We are freestyling, but we decided to change it up a little tonight. We have Hackley versus Wade discussing race and the Willie Lynch letters. Dr. Hackley, I'm going to give it back to you. I'm going to ask you to wrap up your answer to Brother Wade in 60 seconds, and then we're going to turn the mic back over to Brother Wade.
Okay. In 60 seconds, the Charles Lynch was the Justice of the Peace during the American Revolution, who was noted for what they call in Virginia, the state of Virginia, the Lynch Law or Lynch's Law, which was the punishment for loyalists. It's where the term lynching came from, even before this whole concept of Willie Lynch came. And I talk about in my book that yet the William Lynch, even though there are documented William Lynches that came through that state of Virginia, even if Willie Lynch is not a literal person, there is a whole clan of people with slave descendants who still live, even in this city, Washington, D.C., who came from that area of the plantation. And then also there is Charles Lynch, who is documented on the book on the laws. Virginia is a commonwealth, and so they have their laws, who instituted lynching as a practice or punishment for loyalists. And then of course it was passed down. But the validity or the verification of it being such is that it's a real concept that had more than one resource. Even though the appearing of this letter is said to have appeared in the 90s or whatever that people say, there is still literal information that can be accumulated even by Googling it or going in and researching yourself on how this stuff ties together. But I don't want to go too far into, I hope that I was able to give a little bit of history on the verification, because of course we're going to talk about the point of the matter. But I hope that I was able to give a bit of history that would give some understanding to the concept and the reason why I wrote 576 pages on the concept and the history behind it.
Okay. Now, before I give the mic back to Mark, I just want to make you both cognizant of the time. We are at 10:29. We have a lot of information to cover in the next 25 to 28 minutes, so I'm going to only give you both 5 minutes apiece, and then we're going to wrap the show up, okay? So,
okay.
Mark, do you feel that Dr. Hackley adequately answered your question, or what's your rebuttal?
Well, what I would say is this: there's no doubt Charles Lynch, and I kind of understood Charles Lynch would probably come up in the conversation because he's been brought up before. And there's no doubt about it. The lynches are definitely known in the area. But here's the problem for me. Other than that, and again, actually, there's some other issues concerning the actual letter, but I would like to address some of the historical pieces. Number one, there's no record of a William Lynch prior to 1742, first of all. There's definitely not. Number two, there are lynches that owned a plantation, but there's no documentation that would suggest, because if you read the letter, it suggests this, that he had a plantation in the West Indies, that he was coming from the West. He didn't do any of that in the West Indies, so to speak. So, therefore, I'm just saying, again, for the fact, because you know what? We can truly talk about the spirit of the letter. But only problem with the spirit of the letter is the spirit of the letter ominously appears close to and around about the Million Man March, number one. It also was not prior. There's no historical link. Like, we can find writings by Frederick Douglass and various other writers doing certain period pieces. We can find nothing. We know about the lynches in Virginia. We don't know about the lynches in the West Indies. We don't know because there's no information suggesting there were the lynches of the West Indies, and there surely isn't any of a William Lynch. But here's the point, because I agree with Dr. Hackley in this. I really wanted to talk more about, because I really wasn't getting off too much into that part, the history part, because I actually have researched, and you're right, you can Google a lot of information, and there's a lot of debate about not just the authenticity, but the fact that did a William Lynch exist, because the books don't show a William Lynch existing prior to around 1742, and that's in Virginia, and that's in the Pennsylvania, Virginia area. So again, and I know that there's definitely some scholarly work there, but with any scholarly work, there are people that are either detractors or those who challenge any level of scholarly work, and we can do this on and on and on. But the Willie Lynch letter actually has some very interesting concepts that I was more interested in discussing as far as its effect on the generations that have followed supposedly 300 years since this letter was written. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk about more so anyway, but I'll give it back to Dr. Hackley.
Okay, I do want to say this. When it concerns the West Indies, I did a panel discussion in Atlanta. And I did a panel discussion in Atlanta, and on this panel discussion were, of course, leaders from the Nation of Islam and some other people, some other doctors, professors. There were even people who had rebuttals for, I remember very clearly, a professor from Morehouse. We had a surprise guest come in of the back door, and that is Dr. Miles Monroe. And when Dr. Miles Monroe came in to when he came into the conversation, he began to, he did not go into the historical debate of whether the lynches existed on, you know, there or whatever, but Dr. Monroe told us what, I don't even know that it's in books at this juncture, but Dr. Miles Monroe told us about his personal challenges all through grade school and all through his school, where they had to hail allegiance to the queen and also be declaratively slaves to the kingdom. And of course, you know, they say God save the queen. And so, and they had to declare themselves slaves and declare that they would not rise up above that. And he said that the singing of the national anthem and a lot of those things were not actually stopped until the 1950s, where they began to stop doing that. And, of course, the queen is in her jubilee. And so even though there is not that I have found yet, because I'm still researching and I'm not done with this particular project, but I am on the warpath when it concerns the West Indies, and I may even have to go there.
Yeah.
But I have been to the embassy, U.S. Embassy of Benin, and I have begun to research the actual trade that went on the island of the Republic of it wasn't a republic then, but Benin, and the actual the people who came over from there down to the islands and then up here. And so there is I have a constant historical research going on the concept, and I'm not necessarily, I don't want to get into it like you said, because that's something that could,
right.
But Dr. Monroe, Miles Monroe said himself, that it was something, all of the leadership traits that he teaches now was something that derived from his having to overcome the slave mindset that was taught to him in grade school and throughout his educational process.
Can I say something about Miles Monroe? Miles Monroe is a definitely no. I don't know if you know who he is, Bree, but he is a noted Christian prophet as well as teacher. But he is not a historian per se. And though his experience is truly his experience as a kid growing up. When we start talking about 1742, I'm sure again, this is kind of tongue in cheek, but we know he wasn't around during that point. And I think the fact that if you think about it, the first paragraph of the Willie Lynch letter makes a point of the West Indies. That's a big point as far as where his whole process of applying this thing happened. So it's really important if this thing actually existed. It's important to be able to trace whether that happened. I don't want to talk about that.
Interject? And
yeah,
this will pretty much be the only interjection in terms of information that I want to share with the both of you. I tend to know firsthand that this happened because I have a person in my family that's related to him. And they did the historical, they did the family tree that took it all the way back to Willie Lynch. And I can provide
that
information.
I would love to see that. I'm also appealing to the scholarship of Dr. Hackley. I didn't hear him say that. So I don't know. I mean, because he said he's still on.
Let me also say this to add to it. There's a woman, Theodora Elizabeth Lynch. And Theodora Elizabeth Lynch is a native of Jamaica who wrote a theological book about, she wrote a book about theology. Now, that would put a Lynch in the West Indies.
I know lynches that live in Lynchburg, Virginia. I know lynches that live in Goodland, Virginia.
I know lynches that live in
Richmond, Virginia.
And that was never. If you heard what I said,
I'm looking at right now.
I'm gonna say it again. I did not say there were no lynches. Never said that. As a matter of fact, I am agreeing
What I'm disputing is just that this happened. It does exist. The letter, like a lot of artifacts, I mean, they just found.
Just like the Dead Sea Scrolls or any other thing.
Exactly.
Here's the thing. From an archaeological standpoint, from a sociological standpoint, you verify stuff, especially if you can present it as facts. That's my only point. And I'm not disagreeing with the fact that there's some anecdotal information, but when it comes to a clear trail to suggest there was a plantation that William Lynch was involved in the West Indies, that this letter existed and that William Lynch existed prior to 1742, there's some questions about it. That's all I am saying. I'm not even suggesting that I'm correct about it, but I haven't heard a whole lot of information that can clearly refute what I am saying. So, therefore, it's speculation. But like Dr. Hackley said, and he mentioned that, and I heard him say that, it's not even about the authenticity of the letter. It's about the verbiage in that letter and what it could mean. It even is possible that it's true, that it was implemented. Because there are different strategies of social conditioning that were used. But the specific strategies that are outlined in the Willie Lynch letter are quite interesting and highly inflammatory. So, as far as the 300-year effect per se,
let's get on to that, and we're going to turn that over to Dr. Hackley because he wrote the book. So let's hear from
that's
him.
Right.
Okay. Now, as far as the effects go, I could write 27 books for the next 30 years on the effects and what it has done throughout the culture. And this programming, this social programming. But I want to bring it home to a nutshell today. There is a a French poet and a human activist by the name of Victor Hugo. And Victor Hugo said this. He said, a creditor is worse than a slave owner, for the master owns only your person, but the creditor owns your dignity and can command it at his will. Right now, there's something worse than slavery, than physical slavery going on. People's dignity about who they are, what they're worth when they walk into a bank to get a loan, what they're worth when they walk into the housing market and they want to be a first-time home buyer, what they walk into when they are applying for the same job that maybe three Asians are applying for and three Latino American brothers are applying for, what they're facing as far as their dignity and how they are having to navigate through the reality of what just the credit system alone. Let's not talk about my opinion or your opinion. Let's talk about the mighty dollar in America. Who can get it the fastest? Why can't we get it the fastest? And when did this start? If it just started today, if this financial discrimination just started today, then you might have a point. But if you can look back to a time, if you can remember in your natural life a time where you could not even, or your parents, let's just say your parents, where your parents could not go into the bank and get a loan in their name or whatever. If you can remember a time, we are dealing with an issue that has had an effect. Why is 2012 significant? And I'm going to say that you said this, and I want to respond to it. Why is 2012 significant? Because the last children of the slaves are dying in this time. Those who were born slaves. My last mentors, great grandparents, who actually were the sons and daughters of slaves, are dying. And in addition to that, this is a very strategic point, because the story and the issue of what has happened to us in time past can get lost in this year, or it can be rediscovered, confronted, and addressed, and we can get somewhere in this year. So this is a very important. Okay. You're right. It could be 300 years. You're exactly right. Hackley. It could be 300 years. Yes, sir.
Dr. Hackley. And 14, you got to see, my thing is this. It's several things. Number one, my mother owns her home, and they got their loans from black banks in Chicago. Well, they finished. So in Chicago, but let's go to 1440, back to areas around West Africa. First of all, the whole issue of slavery and how we enslaved our quote unquote black people, enslaved their own people and sold them into slavery, probably to me is much more poignant and important than something happened in 1770, because there was an origin for the transatlantic slave trade that people don't want to talk about. It in 2006, you got to remember the Ghana government made a formal apology for their part in the slave trade and their part of selling off these slaves. So the reality was this. We, meaning forget William Lynch, because we didn't play with the William Lynch letter all we want. It was a process that we, meaning people of color, black people, whatever, of West African descent, played an unbelievable part. Without their complicity in the situation, there would be no slave trade. It wouldn't have happened without their complicity in the act.
But I wanna. This is what I wanna do with you, brother. I wanna agree with what you're saying, and I wanna add to it. I wanna agree with what you're saying, and I wanna add to it. I wanna add this to it. I want to add that in addition to Ghana making an apology, the Republic. Remember with you, and I'm in IHOP, so I'm gonna talk while I'm eating. Now, the Republic of Benin, the Republic of the Embassy. Well, I went to the Embassy of Benin last week and met with the ambassador. In addition to them making an apology, the Republic of Benin made an apology, and they talked about the particular king whose children
whose children were sold in, and who and what and how and why the negotiations were done. And in addition, to that, there are spaces. We have a program that we're calling Bridges, and Bridges will establish a museum in America and a museum in Africa that will actually date and time and give credence to all of the historical. All of the historical conversation around how we sold ourselves in, but we did not just sell ourselves in because there was a European subjugation pressure going on in Africa then, like it's going on now. Mm-hmm.
It was because they were taking advantage of the whole fact of selling goods and trying to sell off the whole perception that this is what they needed to do. Because you got to remember, slavery and war went hand in hand in Africa. Rival tribes did it all the time. And the reality was, when I take over another tribe, I cannot afford from an economic standpoint to take on a responsibility of those people, number one. Number two, I don't truthfully want to indoctrinate my people with their beliefs or their systems. Hence, we're warring with each other. We don't have a certain same ideology or belief system. So it was easy to co-opt that with the whole concept of, hey, take them off of our hands. Take them off of our hands. We don't need them. Because, see, first of all, what you got to remember, when I fought a rival tribe, I didn't see them as being me. I saw them as being my enemy. So if I give my enemy away, I don't have a problem giving my enemy away because he ain't my brother. He's my enemy.
But this is also what I want to add to. We're not talking about enemies that were fighting rival tribes. We're talking about kings who were being threatened of being taken over or their government being put out of existence or their kingdom being put out of existence if they didn't give up this dimension of children or this dimension of their own. They were being threatened with war. They were being threatened with subjugation. They were being threatened with the rape of their women. They were being threatened with the acquisition of their land. And so we're not just talking about two tribes fighting in the jungle and we just gonna take these people and we're gonna kill them and send them on. No, we're not just talking about that concept. We're talking about a concept of just like today. If somebody came to you, brother, and you got a whole staff. Then watch this. If somebody came to you and your entire staff is African American and it's people that you hired, people that you've grown up with, and you built your business, and now a company wants to come and buy you out. But they say in order to buy you out, we don't want to take your VP and we don't want your marketing director. We're gonna pay you, but we need you to fire them, get the company ready to be turned over to us. We are going to choose whether or not we're going to keep your employees. And after we choose whether or not we're going to keep your employees, but you can't be worried about that. You can't be worried because we're going to compensate you and we want you to walk away. These people have pensions, they have retirement, they've been working with you all these years. It's the same kind of pressure. Are you going to sell your company? Are you going to sell your company?
But see, wait a minute. But see, Brother Ackley, see, that's
would
it.
You, would you sell
you're
your company, brother? Would you sell your company?
I'm going to answer that. You're telling me about the pressure that I give into for looking out for myself. So, hell yeah, I'm going to sell the company. Why? Because it benefits me and my mom. And my mom. You feel me? I'm just keeping it real.
Okay.
So, what happens
Jeremiah, you weren't here earlier to hear Mark's ideology. He believes that a man should take care of man and a woman should take care of woman. They should pretty much live like
I want to address what he just said. Can I just address what you just said? Okay, so you're going to sell the company. But this is my concern. And you got a right to look out for yourself. You got a right to look out for yourself. But this is my question, Brother Wade. If you had children, Brother Wade, would you prefer to pass them money, or would you prefer to pass them a name that's worth more than anything that anybody can buy from you?
Okay, now I'm gonna answer that, and I'm gonna say when I say it that I will take it. I'm saying to you back to the African king, because that's what we were talking about, right? The African king, right?
Yeah, but I want you to answer that question.
No, wait,
would you pass down your money?
I want you to answer your question, though. I want you to answer that question for me. Would you pass down the money or would you pass down your name if it was worth more than them dollars?
If, and you just said the big issue, the caveat is if my name was worth more than my money. And the question is
now,
this. Only, the only thing about it is that's a crapshoot because I don't know how much my name is worth as far as in generations to come, per se. You see what I'm saying?
No, no, no.
I just
I'm
don't
talking
know
about
that.
I'm not saying that in generations to come, I believe that your name is as valuable as you see it.
My name is also, think about it like this. It's kind of like back in the 70s and the 80s when they had the E.F. Hutton commercials. The E.F. Hutton commercials was about, you know, when E.F. Hutton spoke, everybody listened. Because it had built up a reputation and had built up a status in that community. So that name, because of what its lineage had been, it had that clout. There were other names that did not have that clout. That could not bring on the effect of that name.
Okay, then let me respond with this. Today, I had a meeting. Well, the ministry is looking for new office space. I went down to Nanny Helen Burroughs Avenue, which used to be named Dean Avenue. It's in Washington, D.C. You can look it up on your Google map. On Nanny Helen Burroughs Avenue, there's a building called the William K. Collins Empowerment Center. It is a business incubator center for disenfranchised new businesses or whatever people need. It's a business business center that you can not only move in, but they offer all of your phone, your internet, everything, or whatever. So when you move in, you basically it's a turnkey operation. You move in and you can do whatever business is necessary. Now, I asked a man today, who is William Collins? William Collins is a black dentist, one of the only black dentists in this side of Washington D.C. He died. The property stayed vacant for I want to say 10 to 12 years. The man that knew that he said he died, and he knew the dentist. His sons did not want to necessarily remodel the property, but the man brought the property from the sons. The people in the city could not buy the property because they couldn't find where the property was located because he brought it when it was Dean Avenue. It was on the books as Dean Avenue, even though they changed the name to Nanny Helen Burroughs Avenue.
Yeah.
So what happens is when he thought in his mind, when I was a boy, this was called Dean Avenue. He went up, looked up Dean Avenue, opened it up, grace of
eight
God.
Minutes,
I'm almost done. He's able to buy the property. He goes in there. What does he do with the property? He incubates businesses, watch this, that are now worth $8 million on the same strip, that are now worth in that particular place, that are now navigating through the city, that are now leaders in construction. He's taking people from Guatemala and taught them English. It's not just African Americans. It's all dimensions of people who have been in challenging areas. But he is African American brother. When he told me that story about the William K. Collins Empowerment Center, it made that address have more value to me in my mind because in that particular place, I know that man's blood, sweat, and tears has been sacrificed so that he can not only – and that man is there, and he probably never even thought that his name would even come back because his sons didn't necessarily want to take on the responsibility. And they had a right not to take on responsibility. You got weed growing up and all that kind of stuff growing. You have to, at this juncture, he had a value of his name. And that's the only thing he passed down to his son. And the reason why I say this, is because your name, Brother Mark Wade, is valuable to me. I will never forget you because you asked the questions and you questioned the answers. And so you got to pass that down to somebody today, whether it's worth $1 million or $2. Today?
Well, okay. Mark, in 2 minutes, we have 4 minutes left. Mark is going to get 2 minutes. Jeremiah is going to get the last 2 minutes, and then I'm going to get the last 90 seconds.
Hey, I need this. I need Brother Jeremiah Hackley to promise we can continue this dialogue. That's all I
need. Oh, and we will next week.
We're going to finish this right now because the beauty of this dialogue is that it went in another direction, which is okay. But I enjoy the fact that by virtue of having this dialogue, we can kind of start looking at the whole issue. Because my bigger issue is this, and I swear, I understand the black thing, and I understand black, but I said this on the last show that I was on with you, and I said, you know what, the whole concept of black is really is a really good question. Because as we continue to, and it's funny because the William Lynch letter talks about it, but if we continue to, because we're talking about the ass, you know, mm-hmm. the mule mixing with the horse, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I think that's I think that's hilarious in this aspect. That's such an inadequate comparison, because here's the reality. From a DNA standpoint, another white person or white blood, as he would have it, that's not an adequate comparison to the actual anatomical and DNA structure of a horse and an ass. I got the point. And this is where it goes awry. The problem is that the humanity in all of us, and especially when we have the underpinnings of Christianity, because, see, Christianity takes it on to a spiritual level, which transcends color, which brings me to a whole other level, because one of the things that I say about Martin Luther King, and I'll leave that, he had a lot of issues behind. If you look at some of the historical pieces of Martin Luther King and his followers, he had problems because he was preaching. He was not preaching black. He did not preach black. And people need to understand that. If you study him, he didn't preach black. And a lot of people wonder why some of the subsequent leaders that came out of his camp didn't march on with his same calling cry, because they didn't agree with that whole concept of being black, a white Jew, Gentile, Protestant, Catholic. He looked at God's children. And that's
okay.
An interesting
ended
concept.
There. Ended there, Mark. Dr. Hackley?
Okay, I want to say this. There are two animals in the Lynch letter, an ass and a horse. The ass is a stubborn animal. The horse is a work animal. I have this vision. The one day we keep the slave owner's horse. The next day the slave owner gives to us a horse to have for ourselves. The next day, we learn how to ride and train that horse because we've kept the slave on this horse. Now we have what we call a trade in the horse. When we have a trade in the horse, we learn how to ride the horse. Then we learn how to breed the horse. After we learn how to breed the horse, we become a people who are able to develop a horse industry. We have donkeys. We have stubborn people. We have people that are in our culture, but even with that stubbornness, that is still the animal that Jesus chose to ride in his triumphal entry on into the city. Because if you're going to be get anywhere, you're going to have to be convinced about what you believe and what you know. And no, Martin didn't preach black, but Martin was black. And while he was preaching peace, he was living black. And while he's living black, he was saying that peace is the answer to somebody else's problem with the color of my skin. But I do have to confront the idea that it's very wrong to kill babies and mm-hmm. children, to disenfranchise people. I do have to yes, confront sir. that problem. And so what we have to do is we got to look at both. We can't look at one side or negate the one part and not address the other. But I do promise you that I'll be back on, and I can tell you this. I can tell you this. the answer to where we are as a people will come through a spiritual reality once again, but it will also be a very at times ugly look at the reality of what we're dealing with. We cannot ignore reality, and we of course cannot ignore the truth. And so
okay.
when the truth and reality come together, we'll be better. Thank you, Bree.
Okay. At this time, I want to thank both Dr. Jeremiah Hackley and Mark Wade for participating in this very spirited conversation. They both conducted themselves as gentlemen, and I did not even have to pull out the tape to bandage their wounds. I'm very having said that, we are going to resume this conversation next week. We're going to make this part. We're going to, first on Wednesday, we are going to have the representative, where I'm going to be joined by the beloved Mark Wade. He will be my co-host that evening, and we're going to discuss the representative. Also, I want to announce that starting next week, the Bree Life Radio Network will be in full effect on Mondays at 8 o'clock. we will be airing a show called Journey to Wealth. And the host of that show is named Brett Mitchell, a very good friend of mine who I grew up with. The second Tuesday of every month, we are going to air the Brown Table. And all three of the people who are on the line right now are participants of the Brown Table. And you can go to Facebook and go to Bree Life Radio at Facebook and learn more about the Brown Table. Of course, you know, on Wednesdays and Thursdays, the Bree Life Radio show. On Wednesdays, we have our subject topics. And then on Thursdays, we are freestyling. So in closing, I want to wish you all a happy weekend, peace and blessings, and know that I love you all on purpose. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Yeah, yeah. Adrian in the building. Shout out to Bree.
What up, Bree?
And we're going to go in. Look.
Yes, sir.
Look. We came to break down a few topics here. So if you got time, sit and acknowledge it. It's positive, uplifting, and honest here. Keep your ears open and soaking all the words spoken. A couple of jokes to keep it fun, get your laugh on. And maybe a few pointers to get your cash on. See Bree, she all about building. Straight up out the NY, Brooklyn in the building.
Hike
all the way down to the southern states. West Coast on up to the Great Lakes. So you fragging that gold, so if you ain't fragile, through the net connection, we streaming you to Mexico.
So welcome to the life of Bree, breaking down the shit to the third degree.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live in life.
From politics to the current events, economics to race, whether you're poor or you're rich.
This is the Bree life,
what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live in life.